Mini episode 907 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 907. FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Joe Stazak here today. And in our last mini episode, we talked about a great and fun subject, the 2017 World Series. We are here to talk about one that is much less fun as far as what necessitates it. But we want to make this a celebration of a great career and a great life. The late, great Roy Halladay, who unfortunately passed away in a plane accident. We've seen far too many star players in baseball cut down over the years off the field. This one feels reminiscent in a way of Thurman Munson, even though he was retired, because Thurman Munson, it was the same circumstances in terms of being a private plane that went down. Of course, Jose Fernandez a year ago, different circumstances, but it still sucks to lose somebody. Oscar Tavares, it just keeps happening, and it's unfortunate. Daryl Kyle, if you go back to the last decade, so it's really, really
way back.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's really, Lyman Bostic, if you go way, way back.
Yes. But,
that one's 78. But Joe, with you being a Philly guy, it's opportune, and at the very least, we at the FDH Lounge are lucky to be able to break this down and to be able to celebrate this man and this career with somebody who covered him. So it's great to have you on and get your thoughts about him, Joe.
Thank you. Well, I mean, I'm shocked and saddened and, dumbstruck that such a tremendous guy, tremendous pitcher, and you put all his stats aside, he was a great guy. He really was a great guy, great clubhouse guy, nice to everyone, but, stick around and sign autographs. Even when he went to the shows, the autograph signings, or after he retired, he talks to you. He talked to you like you're a person. And an interesting guy as well, and it's just unfortunate. He came to the Phillies in 2010 and did some remarkable things, had two no-hitters that year. One was a perfect game, and he just captured the hearts of Philadelphia. They never got it done for him, unfortunately. He didn't win a World Series, came in, maybe a year too late. Interestingly enough, they had their success in 2008, 2009. Then they bolstered their roster with Cliff Lee and Doc Holliday and Roy Oswalt. They seemed to go downhill from them, but not because of anything Doc did. Doc was the horse and the foundation of that pitching staff and really the foundation of that team that won 104 games in 2011. But it's just so sad. A guy 40 years old, couldn't wait to get his pilot's license, after he retired and, doing his own thing. He's a great follower. He was a great follower on Twitter. Always had some interesting things to say. And the whole town is just devastated to hear.
Yes. Somebody who, again, you look at the tributes that are pouring in. So many of the great young players of today said that they grew up watching him and his dominance in the 2000s. And David Schoenfeld on ESPN.com had a great point that he was really kind of the bridge, I think, between when you look at, Pedro Martinez and the great pitchers in Atlanta and Randy Johnson, those guys, to the generation that we see now and that we saw in the World Series, Kershaw and Verlander being in there, Felix Hernandez to an extent. He was sort of the bridge between the two because he was really dominant in those years and put up such a great career. 2010, I'll tell you what, I actually have a memory of that with the playoffs. You know, probably not as intense as any of you guys in Philly watching it, but at that time, the circumstances when I was watching the game that night, this is one of those now it can be told kind of deals.
Sure.
We were still doing our show at the Sports Talk Network at the time, which now it can be told, had lost one home, was looking for a new home, so it was a permanent remotes kind of a situation. The late, great Bar Harpo's, we were doing remotes from there, so all the programming was being done from there. I'm there in the sports bar. I think the segment, we actually had Sean Casey on for that segment. We were doing our baseball playoff preview that night.
Nice.
Watching the end of the no-hitter basically as it was happening, you know, just like marveling at it. I will never forget that memory of like, holy crap, this guy just threw the second postseason no-hitter ever. And again,
incredible.
And that can't even compare, I'm sure, to the memories of what it was like watching it in Philly. That's one of those things where a seminal memory of that period of time, again, we wouldn't have believed it at the time that the high point of that Philly era was 2008, 2009, you make the World Series, 2010, another step backwards. We wouldn't have believed that the best would have been, you know, behind that team already. But still, you know, for that one defining moment past the 2008, 2009 pennant years, it was that moment that Halladay gave your city.
It was incredible. And I'll tell you two quick stories. I'll tell you the story about what the game you just mentioned. It's a regret that I have. I had it even before he passed away. But, you know, I've been covering the Phillies closely since 2007 when I was with Fox as one of their sports anchors. And I traveled with the team and we went and, you know, did the World Series a couple years in a row and, you know, kind of in the epicenter of everything baseball and every game, every workout, every practice, you know, for about 5 years straight. There was one night that we weren't on the air because it was a Fox game and it was going to blow through our news. And I had the day off. And I was with my kids. And I said, you know what? I'm going to take the night off and not go down to the game.
Wow.
And it was the opener against Cincinnati where Toscano said, no. The only game I missed in six straight years in the postseason. And, you know, I was kicking myself for it. But obviously, I watched every pitch on TV. And that was his first taste of the postseason. That's the kind of stuff Doc did. You know, he had been to the playoffs before, gets to Philly, you know, he's the savior, which he was, and had never had a taste of the postseason before. His first outing, a no-hitter. I mean, that's just Doc. That was Doc.
Joe, it's so odd the parallels between us, because I actually have a similar story of missing out on something big and something that was a no-hitter as well, and actually even bigger than that. As a little kid, being sick on a Friday night, laying down, I'm like, let me just watch this TV movie. It was Rescue from Gilligan's Island. I'm watching that while I missed on the other channel. And they didn't show a lot of Indians games on local TV back at the time, but they did.
Yeah.
And it was the Len Barker perfect game.
Oh.
While I was watching Escape from Gilligan's Island or Rescue from Gilligan's Island or whatever it was.
Oh, my goodness.
How about that? You and I just miss out on those immortal moments, Joe.
Oh my God, that is hilarious!
It's a great story.
I could have told you they don't escape. I mean, they never escape.
Well,
that
was the one where they made it off of there, and you know it was just a thing of like, you know. Well, and here's the funny thing too, is that like as a little kid, I didn't, you know, like. It's so weird that I would have been drawn to that. I think it must have just been Stockholm Syndrome because I resented Gilligan's Island for a long time because my parents would make my brother and I share. Like, that was on at the same time as Tom and Jerry. I was a strong Tom and Jerry partisan. My brother was a strong Gilligan's Island partisan. So every other day I had to watch Gilligan's Island instead of my beloved Tom and Jerry. So
it
must have just been Stockholm Syndrome that I was like, you know, screw it, man. I watched enough of these guys being stuck here. They're finally getting rescued. Yeah, they get rescued on the night that Len Barker throws the perfect game. Thanks for mutton, as Seinfeld would say.
I love that story.
Well, so I feel your pain, Joe. That's, you know, you and I have been through the same thing as far as missing immortality, you know. But, you know, with Halladay, you know, it was just always a thing where whenever he was on the mound, there was all in his heyday, there was always a chance something like that was going to happen. And, again, a guy who subsequently, toward the tail end of his career, you know, it kind of ended quickly with the shoulder issues, having the surgery.
Yes.
And that's one of those things where, as you look at it now, for anybody that likes to go, I would say excessively old school in terms of, you know, the Hall of Fame stuff, 203 victories, there might be some people that kind of fart on that a little bit, but I got to think, and I don't think this is necessarily going to affect, you know, what happens with the balloting one way or another. I don't know that it would have been first ballot, but I mean, that's a guy to me. I'll be shocked if he's not a guy that gets in his early years of eligibility. And like I said, I don't think this makes him, you know, more likely. I certainly don't think it makes him less likely. But, you know, how do you look at it? I mean, is it in your mind as certain as it is in mine that we are looking at a guy that had a Hall of Fame career?
Yes. No, I totally agree with you, Rick. And I don't know if it'll be first ballot or not. And again, I don't know if this situation affects it. I don't think it will. But in my opinion, he's definitely a Hall of Famer, so it's not really a matter of if, it's a matter of when. I would be shocked if they kept Doc out of, you know, the Hall of Fame. You look at, you know, some of the numbers he put up with, you know, those bad Toronto teams, and just he was the only guy, you know, on the hill year after year after year, you know, in the same division as the Red Sox and the Yankees, and he finally gets his shot in Philly and really made the most of it, especially the first 2 years when he went 21-10, 19-6, and then, you know, he still had a decent year in 2012, but then the injury, like you mentioned, with the shoulder, and he was never the same after that. He was never the same, but, you know, I think he put his stamp on the Hall of Fame with the perfect game in 2010 and the no-hitter in the playoffs. You know, the only other guy, Don Larsen, to do it in the playoffs. I think he put a stamp on the Hall of Fame with those two outings.
You know, and I'm just curious about that. As far as coming over from Toronto, of all places, I just wonder about that in terms of, you know, and I'm susceptible to it myself as far as, like, sports grudges. I mean, even right now, I'm a guy where, like, I can't believe I'm cheering for Dwayne Wade, you know? But, I mean, was there a little bit of that in Philly of the guy comes in and you're excited and he can put you over the top, but on the other hand, people are thinking Joe Carter? Was there any of that when he came in?
That's funny. That's funny you mention that. Yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of that, but I think it really got kind of put aside because this town was so hungry for another ring. The town exploded when they got one ring in 2008 and then got back in 2009, and they did that without Cliff Lee or Doc Holliday. You know, they got the two back. Well, Cliff Lee was there for 2009, but they didn't win it. But neither of them were on the team when they won the World Series. So, I mean, this was great. They bolstered it, you know, with Doc Holliday, and I just think that everyone was just happy he was a Philadelphia Philly. And then just as quickly as the excitement erupted that they got Doc in 2000, they traded Cliff Lee. And the same day, got rid of Cliff Lee, which is a bad move by Ruben Amaro Jr. He didn't make up for it eventually. They brought Cliff Lee back, but it was an unfortunate situation. It was like, oh, we got Doc and Cliff. And then next thing you know, you hear in other news, Cliff Lee got traded to Seattle. But, you know, and then Doc had to be the horse, but he always was the horse. And, you know, Joe Carter notwithstanding, I think people were just excited when they heard the name Doc Holliday was coming to Philadelphia.
Exactly. And I mentioned that just because of how irrational we can all be about grudges
totally.
And whatnot.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, That's totally Philly.
Well, you know, Cleveland too. You know, again, we have so much in common with these things here. You know, us and our grudges. I think had the Indians ever acquired David Wells, that would have been like the straw that broke the camel's back. Like, we could forgive anyone and anything, but, you know, I think that might have been a bridge too far for us. But, you know, as far as Philly rallying around Roy Halladay, I get it. It's like, why wouldn't you? He's Roy Halladay, and you know, arguably, you know, the greatest pitcher of his time. You know, those years in between, as I said before, these two sort of generations of pitchers. You know, and a guy who, you know, you could make a very strong case was the greatest pitcher of the 2000s decade, and who came in. And it's one of these things where, you know, I could get on here and I could talk about this kind of stuff, basically, as far as between the lines. With anybody, but it's one of these things where I really appreciate, and I know the listeners do too, Joe, I mean, the extra dimension, talking to you, somebody who can give the personal reflections on Roy Halladay, you know, that's the thing to basically set this segment apart, and that's what I really, really appreciate, is to try to help people understand and know this man a little bit better, and to really just sort of add more dimensions as to the loss that we all suffer with his untimely passing. So I appreciate all of the knowledge from you, but but probably most of all the personal stuff, because that's something you can shed light on as a member of the media who covered him and who was fortunate enough to get to know the Measure of the Man.
Yeah, anytime, Rick. You know that. I appreciate you having me on. But it was just, yeah, for, you know, folks out there that, you know, never had a chance to meet him. I can tell you he was a stand-up guy. He was a class act. And, again, he would stick around if you – for some reason we're late to that gangbang, he'd do a one-on-one with you, and he would make sure that you got taken care of, and he was all good, and he was just pleasant to be around, you know. And you're kind of sitting there with your mic in front of this guy that you know is a really good guy, because they're not all good guys, and you know that
right.
as well as I do. They're not all good guys. This guy was a real class act, and, you know, I remember just interviewing him one time, and just, I wasn't even listening to what he was saying. I'm just watching him going, wow. I mean, like, in the presence of this this higher being than certainly I am, but this guy who just has it all going on, his athletic ability, his ability to be the horse and to be the guy and a stand-up guy and such a good guy. He was probably a better guy than he was, you know, a pitcher, and that's hard to do. But it was really fun covering that team, and certainly Doc, you know, was spearheading the whole thing.
Well, yeah, and that's, you know, as far as, you know, they're not all good guys, you know, I probably shouldn't take this great Roy Halladay segment and mention something negative, but I will anyways, because it's in my nature. And that being, I actually got credentialed myself and my cohort from the FDH Lounge, Ken Detweiler, back when we were doing a baseball show together, Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler at the Sports Talk Network. I was his sidekick on the show. We got credentialed to go cover a game up in Buffalo because we were doing a lot of stuff covering Indians affiliates. So we went up there, and I had the misfortune. It was a great fortune, I should say, to interview some players in the clubhouse who were very nice to me. Josh Bard being one of them, and I'm trying to think of who else among them. Unfortunately, the one that I remember most vividly was Brandon Phillips being a real dickhead to me, because, you know, he was in a bad mood because he didn't appreciate being sent down. And the PR guy, you know, had no idea what was going to happen. He was horrified, but it was just like, because he was the one that corralled the players for me. I didn't ask for Brandon Phillips, and I would have never asked for Brandon Phillips if I knew what that was going to be like.
Right.
So, you know.
I've been there.
Exactly. So, you know, I say that to say this, that you can't take for granted that somebody like Roy Halladay is going to be a great guy as well as being a great player, because so oftentimes
Absolutely.
The two don't go hand in hand. So this is
That's
one
right.
of these things where I think we owe it to ourselves, we owe it to him to really especially take our hat off to him. And it's a thing where, listen, sometimes when you are king of the hill, when you're one of the very best in a sport, I've made the case that, you know, and people don't always get this when I say this, but sometimes it's a little harder to be a nice guy when you're
yeah.
that great, just because how do you not start drinking your own bathwater? How do
right.
you not start
Smelling
walking
yourself,
around like
yep.
you're king of the world? For Roy Halladay yep. to be this humble guy that you're painting and somebody who would be nice to people and take time out for people, we should never take that for granted.
No, absolutely not. But you're right. A lot of guys end up smelling themselves and, you know, get annoyed with the, you know, the fans and the fame and the I guess intrusion that they feel. They have to remember that the fans are the ones that basically pay their salaries. And for them to get annoyed, I see it. I see it all the time. I see it every day. The Phillies clubhouse, they weren't always the most congenial. But, you know, Doc certainly was one of those guys. And it was, like I said, it was, you felt comfortable when Doc was around. You weren't going to get into a situation that would, you know, spiral out of control, or because there were situations that went awry, you know, with Brent Myers and some of the other folks in that locker room. But Doc was not one of them. And again, he will be sorely missed. But certainly his legacy will live on in Philadelphia.
Exactly. And as I say, it's a pleasure to get to examine that with you as somebody who could really paint the full measure of the man and really tell us a lot about not just the greatness between the lines, which we saw, but getting the measure of him as a person and everything as well. So at a time like this, again, in the face of tragedy, you know, people feel kind of helpless. There's nothing we can do about this, whatever. But at least on your part, Joe, you know, what you've done, I think, is to really give a great tribute to the man and help lead to a better understanding as to what he was all about. So know that you were able to accomplish that, and we certainly appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Rick. I appreciate it. It's therapeutic actually coming on and being able to talk about it, because, you know, it was just stunning, and it was just upsetting, and the whole town, you know, took him. in the wake of everything going on with the Eagles, I mean, the town just got kicked in the gut, and everyone certainly remembers the, you know, like you said, instead of being miserable and lamenting, you know, the situation, I think it's more of a celebration around here, and I think that's the way it should be.
Well, you're right that it can be therapeutic, but also, too, I think, you know, going back over the history of the show, you know, we've also just tried to value just sort of adding to the public record as far as understanding people. You go back as far as, and again, that we cover all walks of life, that we were able to interview the late, great Dan Weldon a couple months before he passed away. So that was sort of a kick in the gut. You know, we had a tribute segment to him. This summer, our entertainment editor, Samantha Jones, and I, both big Linkin Park fans, we did a Chester Bennington tribute a couple days after he passed away. So, you know, it is therapeutic. It does feel like you're helping as far as, you know, getting it out there to talk about, you know, the person involved and everything like that. And, you know, you certainly have succeeded, you know, in lending a greater understanding. I feel like I have a better handle on Roy Halladay after talking to you. And if I do, then certainly anybody listening to the show does. So very well done. And thank you so much, as always, my friend.
Hey, Rick, it's a pleasure. Highlight of my week. I'm glad you gave me an opportunity to speak about Doc and speak about the series and other things that we like to talk about. And I'm certainly going to return to serve and see if I can bother you to come on my show a few times. I love when you're on. Do such a phenomenal job, and again, I always like being on your show, and I appreciate the invite, pal.
Thanks, buddy, and it's always an honor and a pleasure to come on your great show and talk to the great folks of Philly and get to address them, so thank you. I look forward to the next available opportunity, and I can't thank you enough for being on today and talking to us about this, and thank you, everybody, for listening to FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 907.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.